This is Rating Descending,
where we watch IMDb's worst 250 movies so you don't have to.
I'm Michelle St. Clair.
I'm Abigail Ward.
And this week we watched Material Girls. Two wealthy sisters, both heiresses to their family's cosmetics fortune, are given a wake-up call when a scandal and ensuing investigation strip them of their wealth. Let's watch.
We have a guest this week.
Hey, it's oh my god, it's Mel Killingsworth. What?
Oh my god, is that Mel Killingsworth?
Is that
what?
In the flesh.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Hi, Mel.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Very exciting.
Oh, cool. That's great. This is exciting for me as well, but I guess for different reasons.
Oh, okay.
What are the different reasons?
I'm very excited. What are your reasons?
I'm not really excited to be on the podcast.
Oh, I see. Right.
We're just excited to see you.
Yeah. I'm just like, they say never meet your heroes, but I met you and then I listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
So I feel like it happened in a different order.
That's
but
much
somehow
better. Yeah.
You're still disappointed by meeting your heroes. We are horrible
Certainly,
people.
I think anyone listening to the podcast would be disappointed in us.
Hey. Mel, you are, I mean, who are you? Tell the world.
Yeah, what's
well,
your deal?
That's a very existential question, first up. I'm a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I mostly write and direct things / work on anything you will pay me to work on in film. And I love watching movies, television and movies, and then talking about them, dissecting them, screenshotting them, you know, writing 5,000 words on them at 3 a.m. and seeing if magazines will pay me for them, you know, the usual, not obsessive at all.
That Instagram shot zero, that's you,
that
right?
Is,
I love that,
is, that
Instagram.
That's half me and half Stu Willis. Yes. Yeah. So to be fair, probably the first 3 months of it were 100% me.
Mm.
It was Stu's idea.
Mm.
And then I went, I have this massive archive of things. Let me just start posting them. And Stu's like, great, Mel's doing all the work. That's fine. But now it's about 50-50.
Yeah. Oh, I am the Stu.
I'm not going to tell Stu this podcast exists, but I will tell Chaz, who's his partner in making Draft Zero. Chaz will get a kick out of it. Yes,
Zero.
Shot Zero is me. So basically take a clip of a film, TV scene, and overanalyze it to death.
Yeah, baby. That's good
it.
Shit.
Yep.
Well, I'm so glad you're here because basically last year I was just, you know, looking into like a Melbourne talent, like women in film, queer people in film. And then I came across you because also my friend had mentioned you, Gayden, friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast, Gayden Souza.
And I'm so glad we just got a coffee in Brunswick because I was like, wow, it just goes to show like how friendly and welcoming a lot of queer women in Melbourne are, particularly in the film scene. And it's just...
We're such different people.
What?
I just, every time you tell me the story of like, yeah, I was just like trying to meet people. So I just messaged someone and then we hung out. I'm like, you're describing like a fantasy world, like an absolute dream realm.
But we met because after Abby and I met, Abby was like, oh, you need to meet Michelle. And then literally set us up on this.
That's
like,
how I meet people. Abby says, you should meet Michelle.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, sure, I'll meet this editor. And I'm like, oh, Michelle's cool.
Fuck yeah. Yeah.
Basically.
Okay.
So, but I need to go put Melbourne talent on my business card.
Yes.
So like that'd be, I've never
Melbourne
been described
talent.
As that before.
That's you.
Melbourne
T.
talent.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. Through and through, Melbourne talent.
And I will say, like, the reason I thought you and Michelle would get along like a house on fire is that you wanted very particular editing insights, and Michelle was just chock full of that. So
yeah,
I love an edit nerd.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
You, well, that meant that's why we hung out, and you presented my dream scenario of, like, I would love for you to talk at length about edit theory. And I was like, fuck yeah. And then, of course, do the classic walk in, and I'm like, I have forgotten every piece of information I've ever known.
It's that classic, like, when you go to interview for a job, they're like, what television are you watching? You're like,
I've never seen some episodes
of what's that show? Leave It to Beaver? Is that a TV show? Yeah, and you just freak out, even though I watch like 80 hours of TV a week.
Which is like when people are like, what music do you like? And you're like, do I even like music? Have I listened to anything?
When students ask me what movie I think is good editing, I'm like, Whiplash? Because I gave that as one answer like a decade ago. How long ago did that come out?
Bad movie, great editing.
Oh,
hot take.
That is a hot take.
Hot
That's
take.
Fucking sizzling right off the pan.
You
Holy
hate
shit.
It. See,
wow.
I hate Damien Chazelle.
Damien Chazelle knows
Whiplash.
How to edit.
Such a dick.
See, opposite way around. Babylon, fantastic.
I didn't see Babylon because
okay,
it's Damien Chazelle. I was like, fuck that guy.
Babylon's great. And The man knows how to direct and edit. Oh, ooh, my God.
But I love, what didn't you like about Whiplash? I actually have to
know. That is another podcast, so, and I literally have probably a 5,000 page or 5,000 word.
It's a bonus episode.
Document about breaking down Whiplash, why the difference is from the script to screen, why it's bad. Anyway, okay, yeah, that is a very different podcast.
Wow. Actually. Because I, just quickly, I loved Whiplash because I loved the pace. I loved the atmosphere. The pacing is great.
I love Whiplash.
I was like, I was so entranced by it.
The acting is great. The atmosphere is great. It's a bad movie.
I watched it immediately again afterwards. I was so like enthralled by it. But anyway, that is another podcast.
The direction of the conversation. Finale scene alone should win it an Oscar.
Yeah.
It's just a bad movie.
that's crazy because you're saying every element of it is good.
No. I'm saying the editing of it is good.
Yeah, and then you also said the acting of it is good.
The theory is bad. It's very flat. The characters are incredibly one-dimensional. He sets up a bunch of straw men and then knocks them over and then congratulates himself for winning the argument.
Now, I agree with you that there's a phrase that we've talked about Dan Harmon used called like a monopoly man of like you over clearly set up your joke. And so it's not really a joke because the audience can see you set up the punchline. You could make the argument that that is all filmmaking though.
Well, so Whiplash does two extremes. It does that, and then it does the deus ex machina where like, oh, and now we're going to have a car crash from absolutely out of nowhere. Why? Because it's really convenient for my reasons.
But the car crash was great. I thought it was shocking. Like, I actually thought I was
had a good time.
It was shocking because it shouldn't have, because it made no sense for it to happen.
Guys, Mel is looking at me with such a huge, like, eyes of disappointment, and I can't handle it.
I have strong glasses prescription. Mel. They magnify my eye stare.
And when Mel doesn't agree with you, that look of shame and disappointment is too much. You're right. I hate it. I hate Whiplash. I hated it the whole time, all along.
Okay,
you're a weak woman, Abigail.
Genuinely.
I like Whiplash.
One of my favorite things about movies is that, I mean, I love movies, but you can have someone that you 90% you agree with them so strongly on everything from, you know, movie politics, what movies you look like, etc. But then when you disagree on something, you're so vehemently different, and then trying to understand that point of view and trying to understand why they like that thing. Is it personal? Is it aesthetics? Is it, you know, random chance? Is it, can they articulate it? And then sometimes you have to go away and figure out, can you articulate why you hate it?
Yeah.
And I would much rather have a conversation with someone that I vehemently disagree about a film than someone who's like always like, oh yeah, I also liked that. You're like, well, that's not interesting.
But this will make the opening too long, but I really want to talk about it because I've told the story like three times
editor.
In the last few weeks. That's true. I can cut it out. And then I'll sound like I'm so efficient and a good host. Which is, I cut out me more than I cut out Abby, to be
honest.
Do
you?
You have a chart breaking down the percentage of cut out of you that you
I don't, but that is some Michelle behavior.
Actually, it's more fan behavior. We've had a lot of charts made for us.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Those people are serial killers.
Yeah, definitely.
No, they are my heart and soul. They're exactly.
I didn't say serial killers in a bad way.
Okay.
We're like Zodiac territory. But, all right, sorry, your story.
One time, I was dating this girl. I had been in a relationship for a long time. And so it was first time dating in a while, first time dating since coming out. We went on a first date, coffee date, great time. Cool, rad. Second date, errands. Great second date. Good follow-up date of like, we're just doing something casual together. Third date. All right, here we go. She randomly calls me out to go watch a movie. The movie she pitches, and then I agree to because I'm an anxious person who will just agree to anything, was Alita Battle Angel. A movie that some people I know really like. Yeah. I did not care for it, and I knew in advance that I was not going to enjoy it. But I was like, that's fine, because the traditional date thing that I understand for movies is that people go and they're not really interested in the movie. Perhaps instead they're going...
I'm sorry. If I'm in a movie theater and I want to watch this movie and you want to make out with me, I'm like, stop it. We're watching a movie.
Yeah. No, we're on the same page.
Okay, great.
But I knew that I wasn't going to like it. Anyway.
And when you're dating, you just want to please the person. You're like, I'll do anything that you want to do. That
absolutely
sounds great.
True. Yeah. We were driving there. And I
sorry, wait, real quick. I need more context. This is the live action one that came out a few years
ago. Okay. The live action one. Great. Yeah. We were driving there, and I have since then, I've tried in vain. I cannot think of something more perfectly suited to slowly and subtly break my ability to be on a date and participate in a date as a sentence. Because if it was more intense, it would be easy to go like, well, we're not going to work out what the fuck did you say. And if it was less, I probably would still be able to complete the date. But this is the perfect sentence to completely disrupt my ability to ever come back with this person. Which what she said was, I think pizza is dumb. I
the concept of pizza?
Yes, the concept, the food, it just was dumb. Not is bad. Bad,
right? Sure.
Is like, well, that's sure, you don't like it, whatever. But is dumb, there's nothing to work with. I can't talk. With that. Yeah, that's, and I'm like, I have to understand why. But dumb is too dismissive. So she could be like, I just think it's really dumb. I'm like, it's an incredibly popular food that is mimicked across many cultures.
It is the choice of word. If she just said like, I don't enjoy pizza, or pizza's not for me, I don't like it. To me, it tastes bad. Fine,
totally fine.
But the concept of it being dumb, bizarre.
It's one of the most popular foods on the planet.
Yes.
It can be any. It can be vegan. It can be meat laden. Yes. It can be like
it's leftovers on bread. Yes. It's easy.
Bread with toppings.
Yes,
done.
Certifiably the best food.
Yeah. So bread. I being me, could not let it go. So while we're driving there, it kept like lulling back down. I'm like, I just don't think it's. I just think it's dumb. And then there'd be a pause, and I'd be like, "What do you mean?" Like, kept it all the way into the movie. We watched it. She didn't like it either. And literally, as we're walking out, went, "That was a waste of $20." And on the drive
Welcome
back,
to Australian movie ticket prices, yeah. folks. Yeah.
On the drive back, I brought it up again. I was like, you think pizza's dumb? I just couldn't stop thinking about it, which meant the night ended with her being like, oh, yeah, did it come to mind? I'm like, oh, no, I'm feeling tired. And she just drove me to my house. And then we sat there. And then, you know, that moment where you're like, oh, a kiss is going to happen. And then that moment passes and you go, I guess we're just sitting here. What do you do now?
Did you bring up pizza again?
No, okay. I just went, okay, see you soon, and then left, and we never texted again.
That is such a George Costanza move of you, by the way, ruining an entire date because someone said something you didn't like.
Yeah, it is.
I think being unable to grapple with, like,
I could just reconcile
something
it.
You cannot move past.
Movie dates are really great though,
yeah.
Because in a lot of ways they can become a litmus test. Because either, like, I've been on dates with movies that either I thought they were going to be terrible, we both loved the movie, I didn't like the movie, they liked the movie, they talked me around, yeah. Vice versa. Like, it gives you something to talk about that breaks down everything from like philosophy, artistic taste, sense of humor. Like, there's a lot going on with the movie. But the best part, I mean, I love watching the movie, but the best part of the date involving the movie is talking about it after the fact.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
You get to know a lot of, like, you get to know a lot about a person's like values, what they enjoy, whether you like that about them as well, whether you don't. Like, the selection of a movie for me for a date tells me so much about a person. Well, like, if there's a scope of things out and they choose that thing to go see, it tells me a lot.
Well, hey, I mean, speaking of the perfect movie date, this week we watched Material Girls.
What a segue.
So what would you think if someone invited you for a date and they said, let's go, and you looked this up and you saw this poster and this tagline, what would you think?
For Material Girls?
Yes.
Ooh, and it's 2023.
Well, okay, sure. More importantly, it is 2023.
Is it like a rescreening of it, or are we thinking 2006 or whatever year it was that it came out?
Actually, those are both very, very different
exactly.
questions.
Yeah. Exactly.
So if it's 2023, now? I'd be like, oh, another connoisseur of bad movies.
Yeah.
Okay. And only at the point it is revealed that they like the movie would I go, oh, okay, this is a different sort of date that we're on.
But does it depend on whether they like it ironically or not?
Well, see, that's still the connoisseur of bad movies. Because there's many movies on this list that we like. And I'm like, this is still a bad movie, but I'm having a great time.
Right. As someone who runs a podcast that is devoted to being a connoisseur of bad movies, I feel like you judging that person would, that you can't do that.
Oh, ew, yuck.
Yeah.
I would say either way, the film has, just straight off the bat, I'll say this as well, the film has Hilary Duff, so it's a tick for me. Like, just as a girl that grew up in the early 2000s that did have an obsession with Lizzie McGuire, either way, 2023 or 2005 was this?
Six.
2006.
This is another one of our 2006 movies.
Have you seen How I Met Your Dad?
No, but okay. I know. Does she play like the lead character?
She plays the mom,
yeah.
The person who's telling the story. Although Kim Cattrall is playing the quote unquote modern day her.
Oh.
And then when she flashes back, like you had Bob Saget that was quote unquote Ted Mosby. So you've got Kim Cattrall is adult Lizzie McGuire.
And then finally,
in
the latest season, in one of the episodes, she's referencing something. She's like, oh, yeah, when I was 13, I did this. And then they literally do a cutback gag to a scene from Lizzie McGuire.
The bathroom scene, which is an iconic scene from Lizzie McGuire.
Which is a really fun choice.
It's great.
I was wondering how long it would take me to bring up Lizzie McGuire in this episode, and it took me all of like 45 seconds. But it is a fan. It just shaped so many young women.
I loved Lizzie McGuire, and I did not see the movie, and then because of you, I've seen that movie like 5 or 6 times.
The Lizzie McGuire movie soundtrack was like the first CD I ever owned.
I actually cannot picture her singing it, just you singing it.
I'm learning so much.
Well, I mean, Mel, be honest with us. Were you a Lizzie McGuire fan, or was it a bit before or after your time? Like, how was the...
Are you calling me old?
No, I'm calling you young or old. I'm being purposefully vague.
Schrodinger's age.
Actually, for reasons that had nothing to do with my age, I think, I've never seen Lizzie McGuire. So yeah. I was very unfamiliar with Lizzie McGuire, although I vaguely knew who Hilary Duff was. And she also starred in... this movie that for very strange... So without jumping too much into it, there was a movie with her and Frankie Muniz that they were trying to make
spy?
A thing.
Big Spy.
Agent Cody
Something.
Banks.
Agent Cody Banks.
Yeah. So Agent Cody Banks, Big I watched... Spy. I was not Big allowed spy. To watch movies growing yeah. up, and but what? I, at some point...
Hang
oh,
on.
Yes.
Hang on, wait.
This is a hard thing to
again,
skim
over.
Again,
as you keep saying, another podcast thing. Again, this is a different yes. conversation, but I have to know on another day
yes.
how... it was growing up not being allowed to watch movies, and now it's like what you live for.
I became very sneaky.
Yeah.
And I think my theory is that there are a lot of people who are forbidden from watching movies as children, and those of us who absolutely intentionally go, well, I will watch movies and television no matter what it takes, and do things like create a account under Blockbuster at a fake name and then go to the lengths of getting mail sent to my house under this fake name to
fake
back
name?
Up my block. I'd have to actually look it up.
Oh,
it was
I
very close
know.
To my actual real name.
Oh, I want to know.
Because they didn't require ID or anything at the time. Like this was a much looser time. You didn't have to have ID, but I had mail with my name on it. Anyway, was not allowed to watch movies or TV, but at some point was flying across the country on an airplane, and they played Agent Cody Banks. This is how I learned who Lizzie McGuire was.
Yeah.
Classic.
Or rather, Hilary Duff. And that was pretty much my only exposure to Hilary Duff until, like, so now that she's got this renaissance with Younger and with How I Met Your Dad and with, like, things like that, like, I vaguely, you know, sort of know who she is.
Yeah, right.
Either of you guys watch Cadet Kelly?
I did.
That was on repeat a lot on the Disney Channel. I've seen that so many times.
Did you have no idea what you're talking about?
It's another Hilary Duff movie that's also got the woman who is in Even Stevens and the voice of Kim Possible. What's her?
I don't
what's
know
her fucking name?
I do love Kim Possible.
It's something with R. Yeah, that show was. That show.
You
was
say
boss.
Rhett, and I immediately Butler. That's it. That's
yeah,
all I got.
That's right.
Yeah, Rhett Butler. It was. It was Hilary Duff and Rhett Butler.
I could see it really.
As like military dances.
Wait, actually?
Yeah, they're like doing a military parade, but then they like innovate by making it dance. Kinda.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
It's very specific. We don't really do military school in Australia, so a lot of American movies were really hard
like
to understand.
ROTC?
What?
ROTC? ROTC?
What?
ROTC. You American.
Yeah, so that's
what is
what,
this?
I think that's what we call it in the like you ROTC. Have like you do it's called ROTC something 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 cadet. Yep, nope. I don't know because I was never part of it obviously. But that's
okay.
what they call it, and it's like underage, like it's what you go into in like high school, and then you can also do it at university where it's like this quasi boot camp that, and then you can join the military reserves through it, and it's
right.
the whole system.
You should watch Cadet Kelly. You'd have a lot to say about it. I think you'd understand the system intrinsically. So.
I've suddenly created my own very, very specific niche on this podcast.
Yeah, you know about the military. That's why you're on Material Girls.
All right, I see what we're doing. We're really, Michelle is desperately trying to bring this back around.
We're so far in compared to where we should be.
You can cut all this out. That's why you're the
yeah,
answer.
I know. Yeah.
No. And also, really quickly, I mean, that's your association with Hilary Duff.
Sure.
Do you have any association with Hayley Duff, her lesser known sister?
None whatsoever.
My association was her bit part in Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
She played the popular blonde girl that
which
Pedro
I have
has a crush
seen,
on.
Did not realize. Okay.
Yeah.
Also,
did
she's,
she
in,
used
a,
to
she's
date
in three
Aaron
episodes
Carter
of Lizzie McGuire. Hilary Duff dated Aaron Carter, yes.
That's
but Hayley Duff didn't, I don't think.
She didn't date anyone notable. It would be tough being Hayley Duff when your sister's Hilary Duff. It would just be a tough lot in life. And she's the older sibling.
Is she?
Being outshined by the younger sibling.
Is she really?
Painful.
Well, she is really older. She's 3 years older. But also, their mother is a film producer, so they're fine.
So this was my entire context for them as sisters, and so I assumed that Hilary was older because she plays very much the prototypical older sister in Material Girls.
Yeah.
And so I just was like, oh, sure, that's typecasting. No, okay.
Well, I think that's also just because the two sisters in this, before we get into the key details, like, the archetypes are... Oh, well, this bimbo has thoughts. And then the other one is a complete sociopath. And, you know, the former does feel like the older sister, for sure.
Yeah, I will say that I didn't find the characterizations completely consistent throughout the film. I feel like they sort of changed depending on what the scene demanded of them at the time.
However, I would agree with that. Also, I mean, we need to know, Mel. When we get guests on, we ask them what films they would like to do.
Yeah, it gives a good opportunity to, like, tie them together.
Yeah. Well, and you chose Material Girls.
Well, okay. To be fair, I looked at the list and I said either Street Fighter or Material Girls. And you came back and said Material Girls fits best in our schedule. And also, I think you were just a little bit of, ooh, I want to see what Mel has to say about this movie.
Yes, it intrigues me.
So, yeah, and I was 100% exactly equally happy to do either of them.
And you hadn't seen Material Girls
I had
Girls
not
before.
Seen Material Girls. But I'm a real sucker for, like, anachronistic adaptations of, you know, Jane Austen or Shakespeare or whatever. I will watch any and every, you know, like the stereotypical, everything from 10 Things I Hate About You to the BBC version of every Jane Austen.
You've got a face of confusion. I think what Mel's referencing is that this is an adaptation of Sense and Sensibility.
That just clicked for me, and it is so not clear.
It so isn't an adaptation of Sense and Sensibility in any way.
Because I hadn't seen the film, I Googled it and went, oh, this is Sense and Sensibility, but in a modern, I would love to see what they do with that. Because I've seen all of
the answer is they didn't.
The answer is kind of they didn't. However, I actually prefer something like this where they do to something like, and I think Dakota is a very fascinating actor, but if you watch the recent adaptation of Persuasion, where they do actually follow all of the plot points, like beat for beat, but they try to add this weird modern sensibility to it, I hated it.
Yeah.
But if you take something like this, which actually throws most of it out the window, but keeps some of the key things, but it's like, actually, this is just a very modern reimagining. And what would it be like if it happened in an era of step-parents or like quasi-parents that are your maid but actually care more about you than your dad does, and like that sort of thing?
I mean, so what it is, sensibility, that's insane. But not very well. What we're talking about is it's an appropriation, not an adaptation. And that's what it is. That's the technical term for it, an appropriation. They're taking the source material, turning it into a whole different world. That fucks me up because I don't look this up because it's Michelle's episode. I just watch the film and I go in blank.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, there's no way Abby's going to know this. Zero chance.
And the thing is, I am incredibly familiar with Sense and Sensibility.
I know.
I grew up with
you
a lot
should
of BBC.
Be the movie.
I grew up with a lot of BBC adaptations. I'm all about it. This did not register at any point
Emma
that it was
Thompson
to do with
Sam.
Yeah.
And yeah.
With
Kate
Winslet.
Yes.
Like, now I
was
realize.
Her,
Ang Lee.
Her,
now I realize that Hayley Duff was meant to be the Eleanor character and Hillary Duff.
I'm watching all of this click for you in real time, and I know that we're an audio medium, so you folks cannot appreciate how much I'm watching Abby, like, the pieces together. You're like the meme of the person who's looking at the whiteboard and, like, seeing the all of the elements.
The Charlie Kelly, like, you're tying it all together.
This is fantastic. So it's Sense and Sensibility, and as soon as I saw that, I went, oh my god, I must watch this.
It is not. It's not really. It's just two sisters that lose what they have. That's it.
They take a couple of the other points.
Like
they
what?
Do.
Like
look, we'll get into it. We'll get into the key details. We'll move on.
I can't get over
we'll
this.
We'll do it.
This is a travesty. How dare that? And I've read a lot of Sense and Sensibility appropriations. This is a travesty.
So, key details. Like I said earlier, this is from 2006, which I think Abby and I, we've discussed before. Like, that is the year with the most films.
It's a cursed year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The director was Martha Coolidge, another female director. At this point, we've lost count, which is...
Oh, that's amazing.
What a
There's definitely no sexism reasons for this being on the list at all.
Sexism has been defeated in the film industry.
She directed Valley Girl with Nick Cage, which is like the movie that kind of launched him. A movie called Rambling Rose. And she was also the first female president of the Directors Guild of America.
Oh, fucking good on her.
Yeah.
No relation to Jennifer.
No, I looked it up specifically. She is the fourth cousin of Calvin Coolidge.
Really?
The American president?
The president, yeah.
Okay.
Calvin Coolidge is fascinating.
Unless Jennifer Coolidge is also related, then I don't think they're related to each other, but...
Wow.
She's just a filthy little Nepo baby. this movie was starring, as we said earlier, Hillary and Hayley Duff. Brent, I don't know whether it's Spinner or Spiner. I'm going to go Spinner.
How many Brent Spiner.
One N, which Spiner. I guess it's just Spiner. Brent Spiner, Angelica Houston, and Lucas Haas, which also means...
Baby Lucas Haas.
Which also means returning actors Hilary Duff from Food Fight.
Yes.
Hayley Duff from Food Fight.
Yeah.
And Brent Spiner was in Superhero Movie in a small part.
All right.
So there we go. And the budget was 15 mil.
Okay. Oh,
that hurts my soul.
It made 16.9.
Oh.
So flop. I did find somewhere that it apparently grossed over 12 million in DVD sales, which would suggest it kind of ended up profitable, but I could only find that on some website called The Numbers, which does seem to have a lot of movie data, and I don't know.
It's also one of those things where production companies are rewarded for making it seem like it made less money than it does, unless it's a mass. There's this weird tipping point, and I'm not sure where it is, where, you know, when a movie starts making Avatar numbers, obviously they want to project, look at how successful this is, but under that, they really want to underreport how much it made.
It's actually,
so they don't have to start paying off any on the back end.
It's not within the one movie, right? It's more about across the company. Because if they can say the movie didn't make a profit, then they can put that as a loss. And so this movie that made a ton of money, they don't have to pay tax on because officially the company didn't make any money because this other movie didn't make any money. That's crazy.
Those poor billionaires.
It's so hard for them.
Also, can I ask, is this the first appearance of Angelica Houston on the list?
It is.
Wow. I fucking hope so.
Yeah, me too. I'm obsessed with Angelica Houston.
She's the only person in this movie who at all... So Angelica Houston and the parody scenes of the soap operas are the only things that are consistently in this movie. Know exactly what they are doing.
I literally
to perfection.
Have a She's note that is film. The difference that a real actress and close-ups do for this movie. It's the scene where she's like spying them.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good scene.
Easily.
She's like, handsome, nameless man rub your temples.
Yeah, it wasn't just a loose wide with a bunch of like first-time actors.
My like queer sexual awakening was a photo of Angelica Houston in the 70s in like riding pants and a singlet on like the back of a chair smoking.
Oh,
I was
God.
Like, that's so hot. And I had it in my year 12 like fucking notebook.
All right. I think I just had another queer awakening. We're going to have a follow-up for this where I'm going to ask you to send me this photo.
I will send it to you.
We don't have to record that one, but it's
as soon as this is over, I'll find it and send it to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Here's the full overview. Marchetta Cosmetics heiresses Tansy, short for Tanzania.
Okay, wait. I know that you got three words in. What's with that? What's with that name?
Well, it's that era where you would call people Paris,
Asia,
or London, or Asia, and so I guess Tanzania. It's exotic. Oh my God, we can just take that. It's ours now.
It's not like Ava had an exotic name. It's not like the Ava. Names are at all linked with
Tanzania.
Each other.
Tanzania.
Okay, go on. Sorry.
Tansy and Ava are typical Hollywood socialites who, after their father's recent death, that was never specified that much, are being slowly handed responsibility over the company by their trustee and family friend, Tommy Katzenbach. However, while fighting to fend off a corporate takeover by rival Fabiella, a media scandal breaks that Marchetta products can cause major disfigurement. The company's reputation is instantly destroyed, and a distraught Tansy and Ava accidentally burn down their lavish home. Easily the most insane part of the movie.
And does the smoking ever come back?
No. Which also, 2006 was like this weird borderline where like having the character smoke wasn't quite yet a full statement, but the other characters very much react with like,
smoking indoors was still legal in Australia in 2006.
Yeah. I mean, we love smoking.
Oh, we do.
But you have that thing where she's like punished because it burns her house down. Yeah. So.
They quickly learn that much of their assets and wealth belong to the company and so have been closed, cancelled, or cut off. As they begin to be rejected
for the win.
Rejected by their wealthy friends, they get help from their family maid, Inez. To try and prevent the now much lower offer from Fabiella from going through, the girls decide to investigate the disfigurement case and save their father's legacy. With help from charity lawyer Henry and Marchetta lab tech that Tansy has mistaken for a parking assistant repeatedly, Henry... John? Oh, I can't remember his name. They discover the woman in question was not disfigured and that the Marchetta test proved the products are suitable for you. Sorry, I'm laughing because I just remembered how sympathetic it's played that she has mistaken repeatedly this lab scientist for a parking assistant.
And she's like, why did you park my car?
He's one of the two brown people in this movie as well.
Okay, so weirdly, I think that is... Sorry, you're not even done with the summary
yet. It's fine. This movie's wild.
I think it's actually meant to be this weird positive commentary on race culture, where like you're an asshole because you think that he's the parking attendant because he's brown, yeah, and that's why you're a dick. But then like she comes back around and they live happily ever after. It's so weird.
It feels like a movie written by these characters as sympathetic. Yes. Is I think the problem.
Yeah, I have so much to say about like the portrayal of anyone that isn't white in this film.
Oh, it's so strange.
To finish off the overview. Yeah. Confronting the board and Fabiella, they reveal that Tommy was behind the plot in cahoots with Fabiella to intentionally devalue Marchetta's stock in the hopes of a corporate buyout. The sisters take over control of the company and successfully turn its fortunes around. That's the end of the movie.
If you're confused because we've broken up Michelle's attempt at explaining this, don't worry. It's not you. It's not just us. It's just this movie.
It's just
like
the movie.
The plot points just keep happening.
Yeah. And again, it's meant to be, I'm not to bring it back to Sense and Sensibility, but if it's meant to be an appropriation of Sense and Sensibility, it doesn't even attempt to really follow the story of it, because it's not like the girls in Sense and Sensibility get swindled out of their inheritance. They do a bit, but the story is not about them getting money back or getting control over the estate again. It's just about them moving on with their lives.
I think the biggest problem with the movie is that it never successfully makes the foundational case that it has to in the movie, which is, why don't they take the $100 and then later $60 million each?
Yeah.
Because it tries to by having them go like, oh, but our dad. But there's so many times where they're in like desperate financial trouble and every other poor person is like, you are talking about you're annoyed at $60 million. Yeah. And they go,
it tries to be like, oh, but if we took that, it's admitting our dad did all these bad things and we need to save his reputation. But even that, like, it's like scene to scene, that changes. This is what I mean by like, there's no consistency in characterization whatsoever.
Yes. And you can't be sympathetic to characters that will either get like infinite money in the future or $60 million. Like, there's no stakes, because it's like, either way, you'll end up rich.
Yeah.
One way or another, you'll come into that
like,
inheritance.
If they stayed rich, like, before the media scandal breaks out, and it's like, you're going to get $100 million, and they're like, no, we want to fight for our father's legacy. I'm like, that's a movie I would watch, even though they're still entitled and spoiled or whatever, because they're fighting for a thing. But when it's like, they are poor, and they would like to not be poor, no, not $60 million rich, but, you know.
to play the average white guy, to play devil's advocate, I will say that if you are adapting Austin, you also have to understand that most of Austin's heroines are like, oh, but I'm about to be poor. They have servants. They have two or three houses. They have horses and carriages.
That's because
the
family is a company then, though.
Yes, that's what this movie's kind of trying to do. Not well. I'm not arguing it does it well. I'm just arguing that, like, I can see how three drafts ago it made sense.
Yes. I'm with you then.
Yeah. Definitely there were too many hands on this script at some point, because it completely,
I think probably what happened is someone wrote a Sense and Sensibility adaptation, and then someone managed to get Hiller and Hayley Duff attached, and then they drastically rewrote it in this way that they're trying to make it, I'm assuming, the timeline of her trying to break out from the Lizzie McGuire thing. They're trying to make it not a Disney movie, and in doing so, make it the most Disney movie possible.
It sounds like the same thing of like, is it built yet or whatever? The like, the Ice Cube one we did where he had to build the house in the woods that was like a sequel to Are We Done Yet? Are We Done Yet was the movie. It was like a sequel to Are We There Yet?
Yeah.
But it was also like a remake of a 60s movie. And you're like, no, it's not. No, those are two different scripts. Yes. And then they got
nice
Ice Cube.
Yeah, exactly right. And you can tell that when they were pitching it, they were like, it's a modern day appropriation of Sense and Sensibility. And people were like, tick, tick, tick. But none of that came to the screen.
No.
Whatsoever. They didn't even attempt. I'm sorry, I'm so hung up on it. They didn't even attempt to make the romantic interests at all similar to the romantic interest storylines in Sense and Sensibility. Willoughby's not there.
There were a couple of lines when they introduced the lawyer guy at the beginning that felt like, no, if you go back and rewatch it, you'll notice not characterizations, but literally one or two lines that characters sort of like throw away.
I'm just saying
they must have been in the original script.
I could tell he was a romantic interest, not because of those lines, but because it was 2006. And that means when you send in an awkward but charming white guy with a mop of hair, you're like,
floppy,
this is the unexpected love interest.
Yes. But say if Hayley Duff is meant to be the Eleanor, that means that the floppy-haired guy is meant to be the Hugh Grant character. He's meant to be Edward. He's nothing like Edward. And therefore, it means that Hilary Duff must have a Willoughby character. There's no Willoughby character. She doesn't have a guy that mistreats her and she falls in love with the far more sensible older gentleman, they make no attempt.
It's Tommy.
The ex who they were engaged and then he ignored her as soon as he lost the fortune, originally was.
But isn't she meant to be Eleanor, not Marianne? It belongs to the wrong
now, character. Right. But you are trying to make a one-to-one comparison. And I also think that's a casting issue. That's a casting issue. And them going, oh, well, they wouldn't want Hilary Duff to be this. So it must be Hayley Duff who gets rejected.
But guys, this is a movie where scene two has them struggle to get out of a car. And when Hilary Duff says, why? Hayley Duff says, oh, it's like that on purpose. Anyone who's ever gained baby weight can't fit. We don't need to unpack the movie in the way that we have been doing this.
Okay, let's talk real quick about those opening scenes because
yes, please.
They set the tone for the whole thing.
Mm. Yeah.
First of all,
fat people is the main tone.
They walk into no fat people, obviously, yeah. And like the whole thing where she pretends to eat pizza and she eats like
a nibble.
It's the worst pretending to eat food in film that I think I've ever seen. So yes, but. The opening scenes, they get out of the car, they walk into this club that's clearly trying to be edgy. They pan the camera really quickly past these people that you think maybe are pretending to faint at being strippers. So like, woo, edgy.
Also, I'm pretty sure they do a split screen thing at one point.
Oh, several times.
Yeah. That's bizarre.
There's so many like weird early 90s crossfades and transitions. And I can only imagine the editor like... dying as they dig deep into the Final Cut Pro archives of all those like transitions that are just leftovers from like Final Cut 3 and go, sure, I'll throw this on.
Yeah,
that'll change later. Of Star Wars and the director's wipes. Like, yes, I love it. Star Wars. Oh, it's crazy.
One of the split screens I even wrote down is a bit with it's my favorite bit. They're trying to sneak out and they go through the car, but the parking assistant, Lab Tech, is like having the car driven and they're sneaking alongside it to avoid the paparazzi. And so then they come around a corner. The shot is like a mid two shot of them coming around the corner. And then a split screen comes across that is the exact same shot, but a bit wider.
It's just them scurrying around a corner.
It's just the same shot. It's not anything.
It's delightfully bad. Like the editing and transition and scene cutting?
Every scene in this was like, oh, we're in the scene. Yep. Why don't we just cut to a wide and play some underbed music and then suck every piece of energy out of that room?
Correct. It's, yep.
Every time there's a close-up, I'm like, a movie's being made. We're here.
I just also need to call attention to something right at this moment before I forget. No, I don't have ADHD, Michelle. Hayley Duff's character, Ava, why did they make her look like a mafia wife? Why did she have coiffed brown hair with highlights?
Coiffed? Swept,
coiffed? Coiffed? Coiffed?
Oh, coiffed. I don't know. Sure.
Technically, I think a coif and a quaff would be different.
Well, if you quaff something, you're drinking it, I guess.
It was a coif.
Anyway, and so much bronzer.
Coiffed hair.
Coiffed hair. Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, she looks like an Italian. Like, I'm like, oh, she does look like Camilla from, like, The Sopranos if she had brunette hair. Like, it's bizarre. Why did they age her up? Why did they do that to her? She got done dirty. Hilary Duff looks like a woman her age. She looks like young and flirty and oh my God. But they did Hayley Duff dirty in this film.
But I do also think they made them dress in that classic. It's 2006. I could have sworn it was 2003. You know, it's that classic mid-2000s crimes against fashion being passed as fashion. 80 layers, like a mini skirt over jeans, which also has like a belt that isn't actually running through either one.
A jacket that it only goes up to like the bottom of your armpits.
Yeah, which is over your shirt, which is over another shirt.
It's got one button to put it up, like to do it up, and it's over a tiny mini dress that looks like a slip.
And it's bad enough, but to do it in a film that is constantly attempting to make a joke about, oh, that's 3 months out of fashion. You're like, what? You're just drawing attention to it? It's so
bad. This was the era when Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears both wore double denim. Like, it's
Canadian. That is a classic Canadian tuxedo. How dare you malign the double denim.
I have to be
denim.
More mindful. I'm here with a North American guy, so we have to be respectful.
I will say, sorry, I'm just looking at my notes again. This movie's so fucking
weird. We've gotten like two lines into Michelle's notes.
Michelle's like, come on, guys.
No, this is perfect. It's more just me remembering. I watched this movie this morning and already I'm like, how
have you seen it before?
No.
Okay, so none of us had seen it before this.
No.
Oh, delightful.
But tone, this is one of the upsettingly few movies on this list that I haven't seen before.
Michelle's seen most of them. It's bizarre.
It's really frustrating for my personal reputation. Yeah. But just so many of the moments in this are wild. Like, for example, when they're trying to show connection between... This supports my theory that this movie is written by the characters to try and make them seem sympathetic. They're trying to show a connection between Hilary Duff and the fucking guy, the lab tech guy.
Is his name Rick?
Rick. I think it is Rick. Okay, Rick. Between Hilary Duff and Rick, they're trying to show the connection between them after I think they've like broken into the lab and stuff. And in particular, she says, because we've seen repeatedly that she likes chemistry, you know, such as earlier when she mixes together rose water and avocado. And she's a fucking skincare genius because she knows that's good for your skin. And she says, I wrote this down, I actually really love chemistry. And then he says, no way, me too. That's why I work in the lab. He's a chemist. He is a chemist. We know he likes chemistry. That's fucking insane.
The only other foreshadowing of that we get is there's a line between the two sisters and she suddenly out of absolutely nowhere, she starts like spouting off this weird equation. And Hilary Duff's like, what? She's like, you know that like, you know, chemistry something something calms me down. And that's it. That is the only, like she's... At first, she's just talking about, like, fashion and boys and, oh, my God, and nail polish. And then she, like, it's, like, all these theorems. And then she's like, yeah, differential equations calm me down. And you're like, where did this come from? Chemistry, oh, just because you needed to set up this. It's the weirdest characterization.
It's so wild.
I love when, like, they're showing the initial attraction between Hilary Duff's character, like, Tansy and Rick, where she gets out of the car. And she sees him and he says, oh, do you want me to park your car for you or something? And she goes, yeah, thanks. And he goes, okay. And she goes, thanks. He's like, you've said that already. And she goes,
this is also a film where the other time they let someone park their car for them, it's a joke about the fact that they think there's valet parking and it's actually someone stealing their car.
Not just someone, it's Good Charlotte.
It's Benji and Joel Madden.
She was dating at the time.
Yeah, wasn't she like 16 and he was 25 and it was genuinely illegal and fucked up?
What?
No,
what?
Yeah. They started dating. This is fucked. In 2004.
Wait. Sorry. All of them were Good Charlotte. As in the band?
No. Good Charlotte is Joel and Benji Madden, primarily. And then they have a band behind them. They were there. Oh, yeah, sure.
They were
that's like Maroon 5
the
is
guys?
Multiple people.
I'm so confused.
The two guys were the two twins.
Oh, was I supposed to recognize them?
If it's 2006, in 2023, okay. You're not under any crimes for...
Because Joel Madden worked on The Voice Australia for so long, he was always in Sydney. And one time I was having lunch with my mom and he was like on the table next to us and he sounded like such a dick.
So this is a cameo.
Yeah,
it was a cameo. Because he was dating Hilary Duff.
See, what's weird is the way that it was framed, I'm like, I feel like I'm supposed to know these people, but maybe it's just bad frame. Like, terrible framing.
Well, also, yeah. She was dating Joel Madden.
Hilary
Duff was dating Joel Madden, the blonde, and she was 16 and he was 25.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah.
Ew.
And it was genuinely fucked up and illegal and no one wanted to talk about it because they knew she was underage.
They didn't want to talk about it, but they would cast them in the same
movie. Yeah, and they would like report on them being like, Hilary and Joel have stepped out today. He's 9 years older than her. She is underage. And like they were just like, it's fine because it was 2005 and it was just, it's bizarre. It's fucked up.
That's fucking gross.
It's gross.
Oh my
ass.
God.
I feel very bad for her.
Thank God it was just July to November of the same year. Like that's the only positive I can draw out of it is that it wasn't long.
I don't know if that's any better. I feel like if they'd been together for at least 4 years, it was something substantial. No, it almost feels worse if it's a fling.
No, because then it's still like evangelical youth pastor, like, oh my God, I knew her since she was 12 and then now we're married,
true,
you know.
True. So yeah, that's a little tidbit of info.
Dark tangent.
I did not recognize/know any of this.
Well, yeah, I didn't know those details. Right. Thanks, Abby.
You guys really are welcome. It really bummed us out.
Was this something that was like at the time you knew that?
Yeah. Really? I mean, it's just something I've always remembered. It was like, oh yeah, Joel Madden when he dated that underage girl and everyone was fine.
Is it like the Seinfeld thing where everyone just still knows and doesn't talk about
exactly.
it?
Exactly. He never actually got, you know, like pulled up for it. Like no one ever said that's fucked up. Michelle.
Michelle has a second career in beatboxing.
Yeah.
All right.
Also,
all right.
We have to talk about Inez and
oh my God.
The
yeah,
whole storyline around her. Just because I was thinking when the film ends,
yes,
the whole thing is that she talks
you.
About how they're her daughters, right?
Mm-hmm. They're her daughters.
She talks about how she can't get them into the country because of immigration post 9/11. And
but, and also, film, it's expensive to bring your family from Colombia to the United States.
But your dad was going to help me. Like, that was like that tug at the heartstrings line, right?
And then you're also left thinking, why did no one help her sooner? That's so fucked up. And then at the end of the film,
America,
the girls are successful and she's got her daughters back and they're now in their beds and it's a happy ending. And you're like, why would you pepper in such a genuinely emotional, heartfelt side story and not just make a fucking movie about that and not two girls that lose their inheritance? Also,
she has the daughters, which means, like, the implication is that the two sisters, helped her get the daughters.
Mm. Yeah.
Which, to me, like, they had infinite resources prior to this point.
Why
which means
they
tried
to play it off. No, they did try to play it off like they didn't know.
Yes.
So she's like, my daughters.
That's
and they're
not
like,
better.
You have daughters?
That's not better.
But the film thinks it's better, which, again, supports your theory that it's written by. Like,
this
when
is what
she
I mean.
Talks about her daughters, like, oh, you have children? And the.
This is
obviously
like the fucking New York
the
Times.
Film is like, oh, if they'd known. And you're like, wait, she was their maid, housekeeper.
20 years?
For 20 years, and you never knew she had
like,
daughters?
We had an article of like, absolutely. CEO found out that their worker is in hospital, so they paid the $40,000. And I'm like, that's not a happy story.
No.
It's deeply evil.
It's deeply evil on so many levels. Because like the first level is, your dad knew and was quote unquote trying to help you. Yeah, no, had infinite resources and never actually did anything. So it was probably just lip service, right?
It's
and
craziness.
Also, you never talked to your maid and now you're asking to treat her. And again, it's this character and every once in a while she gets these like, I feel like the actor is really trying. She's got these like asides that are like, you should have known that this was happening.
Yeah.
But it's not in the script. This is this is clearly just the actor.
Yeah. Maria Conchita Alonso is like, you are fucked up.
Yeah. In the real world, in the real world, she is the protagonist trying to get her children back. Yeah. And her employers are the villains that aren't helping her. And
absolutely.
It's like, so it's like, why are we
movie.
Meant to be sympathetic? Exactly. I'm like,
it's,
why are
guys,
we watching that?
It's called
that?
Knives Out and it's really good.
Yeah. I was like, why are we watching that story? And why are we instead watching the story about these two rich girls trying to stay rich? That's just tone deaf.
Yeah.
It made me genuinely angry.
Actually, speaking of tone deaf, one of the other things I thought was wild. There were two different things I thought were wild that were, I feel, similarly racial. One was... She's telling the sub story of how her mum isn't around. I think Ava was telling it of like what happened to the mum, which was like, oh, she's a model. And now she's off with an Egyptian prince, calls herself Isis.
Isis, yeah.
Very funny in 2023, very different in 2006.
Yeah.
Calls herself Isis and says that we're her cousins. And my immediate reaction, my darling girlfriend Brooke was there when I was watching it. And I immediately turned to her and I was like, Egypt doesn't have a prince. Is she getting like Nigerian prince email scammed? Like... Do the writers not know that? It's so easy to know that.
Doesn't it's so Egypt easy. Have a president?
There were multiple lines in this movie where I'm like, okay, surely somebody in production, whether it's the writer, the director there, somebody realizes this is funny, right? And it's intentional, but it's very difficult to tell.
No,
I'll tell you, most of the time,
serious.
It's Hilary Duff.
Most of the time, it's serious.
Yeah.
But like every once in a while, there's something you're like, this is so fucking... So very absurd and out there and like such a stretch for you to get to this joke that it has to be intentional.
Yeah.
It's such a very tonally weird movie where 100%. Like they will swing from dead serious. My mother abandoned me. My father's dead. I don't know how to navigate the world to just the absurd slapstick.
Or for example, the bit at the end where they're finally confronting Tommy. Hey. And then the
assistant who's the black man who breaks into that,
who breaks into a strange rap, and
who
then
breaks
like,
into a very strange rap slash spoken word poetry,
and then
the actor commits.
He fully commits,
but then
afterwards he like grabs his head as if he's like coming out of a stupor, as if like the spirit of rap has overtaken him.
And he was the one major, like a main black character in the film, and they made him do a rap. At the end of it,
out
I was like,
nowhere.
This is, again, tone deaf, insensitive.
He's just the Bluetooth
tonal
guy.
Tonal whiplash. Yeah. I just had no idea how to take
it's just the
any of it.
Stereotypes this film pulled out and thrust on all the other side, like on all the side characters.
But also,
was offensive.
If you told me that this film had, I don't know, pick a number out of a hat, 18 different directors and they each directed like four scenes, I would 100% believe you.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you know
same
what?
Same with the
you're
script.
Right.
I feel like it could have had 20 writers over 3 years.
Well, like,
just coming back and doing it a new draft every time.
Similarly, a joke I thought was actually kind of funny but a little underplayed was, you know, Tommy, the Brent Spiner character, who, by the way, was fucking Data in Next Generation. So seeing Mr. Data go from being like, oh, yes, to being like, hey, come on, kids, we're doing this together.
I hate to ask this because I sound so ignorant. Is Next Generation Star Trek?
Yes.
Okay,
Yes. Sorry.
I've never watched anything Star Trek related because I'm a fucking loser.
Next Generation's pretty good. Like, yeah. You don't have to... There's like eight of them now.
Yeah.
Next Generation's the show, right? Okay. Like, the original is good, but it's very dated.
Yeah.
And then that one is like the This Is Great TV show, right?
Good to know.
Yeah. But a running gag with him is that he missays words. He gets words wrong. So I have a list. I only found four, but I feel like there's a fifth one in there I missed of precipitaciously, disfortunately, extain instead of abstain, and symphatico.
Yes,
they call a couple of them out in a weird way. And I think you're right. There's one or two more.
There's
definitely a few more because I didn't clock on it first. And then as soon as I did, I kept noticing. And at some point, someone like corrects him on one of them. So. It's a very strange running gag.
It was precipitaciously that got me because I was like, that was funny to me because like the word is precipitously, but also that is the wrong context to use precipitously, which I think is what made it a funny joke. Yeah, I don't know.
Have you guys ever heard of Father Divine? Like he was
the
like
God?
No, yeah, well, kind of. He was like the guy that inspired Jim Jones from Jonestown. Like he was like a proper cult leader before anyone knew what a cult was. And he was around from like the 1910s to the 1960s. And he he was this like very charismatic man from like North America. He kept making up words in his sermons and people really thought that like flumbastically. Oh and God. Like
it's fucking glass onion.
Flagitatiously, you know, like words like that.
So they used to be religious cult leaders and now they're just fucking tech bros. Yeah. Oh, I hate being alive.
Edward Norton actually would have fit into this movie. I feel like he would have.
You're right.
He would have absolutely chewed the scenery. Absolutely. He would have been the sleazy like company owner who like dad gave the company
now,
to.
I don't think it's possible for Ed Norton to be in a movie and not chew the scenery a little. He kind of does. Did you guys have any other things you wanted to talk about? Because otherwise, do you want to hear some trivia?
Oh.
I love some trivia. Yeah. Give me some trivia. IMDb
trivia. Here's a couple of pieces of trivia. This first one I think you're really going to like and it's going to explain a lot. This movie was written for Mary-Kate Olsen and Ashley Olsen.
If you like ironically watching like Mary-Kate and Ashley Go to London or whatever, you will like this movie. That does not surprise me in the least.
100% scans. Amazing. As an Olsen Twins movie.
Did any of us have a Mary-Kate and Olsen phase? Because Mary-Kate and Ashley phase? I did. I definitely did.
Like watching their movies, you mean?
Yeah, and reading like the books again, as well.
That was in that weird dark morass.
Yeah. There were little like Mary-Kate and Ashley books as well that you could get. And I was a Mary-Kate fan. All Mary-Kate, as if they were like actually separate people, which they were. But I was like, Mary-Kate's got an.
Fuck?
No. In the books, in the TV, in the movies, they're like the same characters.
Abby, you know how twins work.
No. When they're playing the characters, they are like dead on the same in the show and the books.
Right, okay.
But in real life, obviously, it's different. But when you're watching it, you're still like, I'm a Mary-Kate girl, even though they are portrayed in the exact same way.
Yeah.
But I was like, Mary-Kate's got an edge to her. I just can't describe it. I can't believe you guys didn't have a. God, you missed out.
It was a lot easier for me to engage in things that were like borderline, this is for girls, but it, you know, like if it's too girly, no family member would like buy it for me or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? So like, which is often how young girls get exposed to the, this is marketed towards girl things, is it's just like handed to them.
I wanted there to be a mystery involved. Were you Nancy Drew or Hardy Boys or like Trixie Belden or Boxer? Like that was my jam. Fair. If there is not a mystery involved, I really didn't give
a fuck. I wanted a murder involved. I wanted goosebumps. I wanted.
See, my parents are weird because I had the mysteries, but it was the branch out genres.
No, it was always just like they go on a little adventure together.
Okay,
and they do fun.
I would not be surprised to find out they had whole like little mini spin-offs of like I have no idea. This is blowing my mind that there were books.
Yeah, there were little. I remember me and my bestie in year five would like read them together in her room. We collected them together.
Wow.
Yeah. But that's amazing.
The rest of that same piece of trivia is Anne Hathaway and Lindsay Lohan both also auditioned for the roles that eventually went to the Duff sisters.
I would watch Anne Hathaway in this movie. 1,000%.
Me too. Princess Diaries to this.
Yes. Quality up substantially.
Oh, wait, was this after Princess? Oh, it would be.
It would have been, right?
Also oh, yeah, never
Ella.
Mind.
Did you guys ever watch Ella Enchanted?
I've watched Ella Enchanted, but like... when I was much older, my godkids were watching it, so it's like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Princess Diaries, I did watch a lot of
2001, so five years
Princess
prior.
Diaries.
Oh, wow. Because I feel like Anne Hathaway would have been a bit too old for it.
Yeah, she would have been
Devil
by
Wears
then.
Prada.
Even Princess Diaries, she feels she reads as slightly older than they are in here. Maybe just because she's slightly more self-aware. Like, these are the two least self-aware protagonists in the history of protagonists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even for something that's meant to be based. It's funny, the sense and sensibility thing. I was watching it, I'm like, it feels more like Emma.
Yeah.
It actually feels more like, I know that Austin plays a lot with how.
She was 18 and they did Princess Diaries.
Yeah, which means she would have been 23? 23, 24
for this. Because, guys, she did Devil Wears Prada in 2005.
Devil Wears Prada.
So that she would have been
an
adult.
You can't do Material Girls after Devil Wears Prada.
No.
It's crazy. Here's another piece of trivia. On March 31st, 2006, the entertainment site andpop.com reported that Lucas Haas had said he did not expect the film to be released.
Oh! Not just successful. Released.
Oh.
Further statements suggested the film was having trouble finding a distributor and being bought. On April 6th, Box Office Mojo reported that the movie had finally been bought by MGM and would be released in August. It was released in 1,500 theaters and flopped.
It's actually kind of... It's actually... Yeah, so if this were made now, they would have just shelved it and it'd be a tax write-off.
Yeah, probably.
Basically.
Hillary improvised many lines and moments in the film, Coolidge noted on the DVD commentary. Among others, Hillary came up with the Lucy Walk... when the girls are dressed up as sassy maids and added the reference to women having their own buses in Japan and when the sisters are riding the public transport on the spot.
The Lucy, that makes sense because I actually, that moment, I'm like, that's really quite funny, but it doesn't feel like it fits.
It's so incongruous with
it's
the scene.
So but incongruous. It's like, yeah. But it's a lovely bit, but it just makes no sense in context. Yeah, makes sense.
I do have to say, like, Hilary Duff has always given off sensational vibes. I just feel like you'd meet her in person, she'd be the most pleasant.
And
person.
You watch her now, again, like, you watch her in Younger or How I Met Your Dad, and you're like, her sensibilities, her comic timing, like, impeccable.
Yeah.
Like,
only,
really, truly.
All I ever hear about her is, like, how polite she is and how, I don't know, like, there's been a lot of, like, controversy because she hates her kids getting paparazzi'd.
Well, yeah. No,
she's very polite. Reading about that today.
How's that controversial?
Oh, well, because the paparazzi hate it.
Exactly. Because they fucking hate that she asks them to do anything. Like, it's,
They're like, this entitled woman doesn't want us to take photos of her children.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
Believe it or not, some people are like, that's stupid. You should let us take photos of your children. It's bizarre. But
final piece of trivia is our perennial favorite, not screened for critics.
We've encountered that a lot.
Do you guys want to hear some reviews?
I feel like you should make this a drinking game, the not screened for critic, like certain things. Yeah.
We should call the podcast reviews. Not screened for critics.
Sorry.
Oh, my
reviews!
God. Reviews! Reviews! So this movie has 4% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Jesus.
Even for Rotten Tomatoes, that is harsh.
Critics fucking hated this.
Wow.
It's got 4.0 on IMDb.
Is it because it's for young women?
Who knows? Amelie Gillette of the AV Club said, their portrayal isn't some light send-up of materialism. It's a light endorsement of it. Mm. And that's sort of the theme of most of the reviews. Is like, these are spoiled and entitled selfish brats, and actually the movie thinks that they're awesome.
Yeah.
Here's an IMDb review. I wish I could do like 8 of these. The IMDb reviews for this are easily some of my favorite I've read because they're clearly mostly written by 10-year-old girls.
Oh.
Which also means it's my favorite thing of a very poor grasp
girls
of English.
In 2006?
Yes.
Or like, okay.
Because 2006 Delicious. Means like peak IMDb, you know?
Yeah.
So this first one is titled, This Movie Was Both Good and Funny! by Dilcia31. This movie was better than I expected. I like the diversity in the movie, and I never expected it to be so funny. The acting was great and real. There are parts played by Hilary Duff that I would have never seen her play. Like the part when she was dressed up like Julia Roberts, in brackets, mini skirt and a push-up bra, haha.
I love that as a 10-year-old, there being multiple parts played by one person playing a singular character is actually a boon and not a drawback.
I also like that it's clearly like, when she dressed like Julia Roberts, you mean like a sex worker, in order to get paperwork that she needed to solve the case. Haley's role was good too, very sassy and controlling. The guys were just perfect. They were the cherry on the cake to make the movie perfect. No matter what the old guy critics say, which is just their opinion, this movie was really good and I recommend it.
I may disagree with her overall thesis, but all of her points are solid.
Plus, I got confused. It's PLUS, and I thought it was an acronym. It's not. It's just plus.
Yeah.
Plus, there's hilarious bloopers in the end. It was so funny. 10 out of 10.
Oh, bless.
Bless.
That could have been any of us, man.
It could have been any of us.
2006.
Here's another review titled, I Love It, by Dempsey Rocks.
Dempsey Rocks?
Yeah. You know, this would have been
Patrick Dempsey.
It must have been Grey's Anatomy, right?
Yeah, Grey's Anatomy. This is peak Patrick Dempsey, Grey's Anatomy, heartthrob era.
Yeah.
You know, the James Marsden of his day.
They have very similar energy.
Bite your tongue. Really?
No, I mean, James Marsden's way more charming. But they both have similar handsome man vibe that are underutilized. Patrick Dempsey has more in him.
Patrick Dempsey is always more troubled. And
I think James Marsden's better. I think that both are underutilized in very different ways.
Listeners, this is an audio medium, so you do not see that I'm crossing my arms and glaring. I am yet to be convinced.
Look, Mel has made me hate Whiplash, so just do whatever she says, all right?
Yeah, to Patrick Dempsey sucks.
No, I did not say that. I just said James Marsden is incredible.
I agree with you there.
Sorry, continue.
It's a good movie. They both... sorry, it's one of these. It's a good movie. They both can act and they are really good singers. If you can't accept that they made something with their lives, then quit hating on them. It's not like you even know that at all. What are you doing that's so good in our life that makes you good enough to say they suck? Well, they don't anyways. If you don't like Hilary, why did you go see the movie? Everyone should go see it. It's a great life. It's a great lesson in life and it is great to watch and laugh. I just wanted to say this movie was a good one and keep doing what you're doing, Hilary and Haley. I think I spelled it wrong, but I'm in a hurry. If you like the Duffs, then see this movie. If you dotten, then don't. But if you are a hater and just want something to complain about, then get off the site. 10 out of 10.
That was impressive.
Somebody should pay you to do these.
True.
Like, well, honestly, that's the goal.
There's got to be some ASMR-like site that will definitely pay you to just do these.
So we'll actually make vastly more profit if we just cut the bits where I do the reviews and then put them a separate.
We've had a lot of reviews where there's no punctuation, so we've had to do it as one long sentence. Yeah. I think we should get a compilation of all of those and put it together.
Breathtaking.
And by we mean Michelle.
Or a dedicated fan.
Wink.
Wink, wink.
I love those kinds, and I also love these ones. There's a lot of ellipses in this. Very funny. Oh, sorry. This is Hilarious by Water Skier 92. I guess that must be like a tech company in 2021 about water skiing. Very funny. People have trashed this movie, but the reality is it was really funny and entertaining. Recommended by everyone I know. It is a great pick-me-up. Not a bad storyline. Everyone in the theater was laughing hysterically. Hilary and her sister look very pretty and the outfits are just great. People should stop trying to trash it and just enjoy it because it was really good. I know it hasn't opened everywhere yet, so some people can't see it. I don't know what else to write, but I need 10 lines, so you can stop reading now. Have a nice day. Go see the movie. You will love it very much. Friends don't let friends ride public transportation. That's from the trailer. 10 out of 10.
When they get on the bus and they don't know how to pay and then they just turn and everyone's glaring at them. I'm like, I am all of these riders on the bus right now.
Also though, when they're looking at the maps and stuff, I'm like, LA's public transport is famously pretty awful. Yeah. So I kind of get that.
Oh, it doesn't exist. Yeah. It's so bad.
But that was their reviews.
You made Mel cry.
Actually, listeners, I am actually literally crying.
The reviews are sometimes my favorite part of the show.
Oh my god.
But hey, that was Water Skier 92's review. Abby, what was your review?
This was a 4.2, right?
This is a 4.
This is a 4? Yeah. We're down to 4?
We're finally down to 4.
Holy shit. Sorry, that's monumental.
You're about to bake with barrier.
Yeah, we are.
The first 4 was actually Wounds. I just think we forgot it last week. Oh, no, sorry, not last week. Ages ago. 2 months ago.
Yeah. So, considering it's a 4 on IMDb, I love a good film for teenage girls and for young girls. I love appropriations. I love it when people take text to make it fun. But as soon as I found out that this was meant to be Sense and Sensibility, it was game over. Like, I came into this podcast, this episode, with a lot of, like, love in my heart and a lot of space to explore and accept this film. And as soon as I found that out, it was dead to me. I'm giving it a 1. It's done.
Wow. That's pretty intense. Mel, what was your review?
Allow me a slight rabbit trail for a moment. There were a few years where I was working weird hours, and my best mate, whom I was living with at the time, I was living with him, and he had a baby who was born preemie, and so required like a lot of care and like overnight. And mm-hmm. I would come home from work at like 2 a.m. and Dale would have just gotten done, like, you know, he'd been on like 18 hours of childcare, and he'd like, we'd pass Sean off.
This is pretty funny.
Jess. Right. Yeah. And it's, and what we would do is we would pass Sean off, and then we would get, like, it'd be like 2 a.m. and we would just, you know, get drunk and or stoned and turn on the worst, like, the yeah. worst movies that we could possibly think of, and then we would just have the best time of our lives, like watching, you know, Piranaconda, Sharktopus, like all of these types of, and I was love watching Sharktopus. This film going, even though it's not quite the genre that we usually went for, I was watching this film going, I wish that it were 2 a.m. and I was upstairs in sub-zero temperatures in Wisconsin, bundled up, drunk off my ass, watching this film with my best mate, and just like laughing at how absurd and tonally inconsistent and ridiculous and rich and unself-aware it was. And so, like, if you go in with that exact mindset, you will love this movie. Like, it is, it's not just of its time, it's of a very specific viewing place.
Hey, you're talking to someone who my connection with bad movies is growing up. My desperately sad and troubled mother wanted to be able to spend some quality time with her equally desperately sad and quiet child, and so they bonded, we bonded over watching these awful, awful movies. These movies can bring joy. They're bad, but
and I mean, Michelle is the person that introduced me to terrible films. It's not like I hadn't seen them as a kid, but my true appreciation came from meeting someone that truly appreciated it already.
Thank you.
Bad movie nights changed my life.
But you have to give it a number value, because that's how IMDb works, and that's what
we're
modeling.
It's not about feelings,
off.
It's about numbers.
I'm of the Roger Ebert school of theory in that I absolutely hate assigning star reviews.
Oh, I'm sorry, but this isn't the Roger Ebert podcast. This is the IMDb.
And also, on this podcast, we say Roger Ebert.
Roger Ebert. So wait, this is out of IMDb's out of 10,
yeah.
correct?
We don't believe in the rating system, but that is the system imposed upon us.
We are contractually obliged.
We're contractually obliged.
To also give our own rating.
You know, I've listened to this podcast for several months, and yet for some reason coming on, I was completely unprepared for this moment when obviously I knew that. I think it was like subconsciously, I was just so horrified that I was just like repress.
40 minutes of listening to us, your brain must be mush.
Yeah. Like, I will give this, I think it's got to be a solid. Oh, God.
Search your heart. Say what rings true.
The good thing 2.7. is that the stakes are so low.
2.7.
Respectable.
Yeah.
It's respectable. It's fair.
Yeah, far more fair than my review, for sure.
I mean, it means, look, advanced spoiler, it's going to continue at least 50% of the way the trend of usually guests rate these movies lower than we do because their brains are not spoiled by
this
list.
We were so much better when we started.
I think if you can't, I think the other issue for me, and I know I haven't mentioned this at all until now and suddenly I bring it up so it feels unfair, but that you can watch this and all of a sudden you're in a scene that is clearly a set, like clearly just some plywood that they've popped up, and then all of a sudden in the next scene you're in someone's like obscenely lavish expensive house that they've rented out for $1 million, and you're like, the disparity between the two is so wild. I would possibly rate it higher, but that was really, really throwing me.
Look, it's fair, because on the one hand, like, my memory of it and the joy of talking about it, I'm like, yeah, this I get four. And then I think about it and I'm like, actually, a lot of this movie really quite irritated me. It was really quite bothersome.
All the bits where they kept thinking it was funny to have all the bit characters who were like being really loud and obnoxious and go, shh, 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 for like 30 seconds straight. And you're like, I get it. You can stop now.
Yeah. Also, Michelle, don't be afraid to rate this low, because we found shockingly that as the films were getting worse, our ratings were getting higher because we're getting dumber.
Is this Stockholm Syndrome?
Yeah, and we were like, I'm making an active effort to try and decrease my ratings because I just need to break that pattern.
Yeah, you know, this movie has some tedium. Look, I do want to rate it lower, but I know what the twos are. Like I've said before, for me, two is a movie, and I've broken that sometimes, but like that I have to hold onto something. And there's many movies I've given like 2.5 or 2.7 that I think are worse than this. I think this is a 3.3.
Yeah.
You know, I think
1.3 for each Duff sister.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Each of them were a 3, and so that's a 3.3. Well, you know, That was, nope. That's
our podcast.
Oh my God. We really don't know how to pivot here. Fucking hell.
We've done this 2.5 years and this is the sticky bit.
How do we not get that?
We'll figure it out.
Social media. That's crazy. Why don't we talk about it? We've got some of that. Well, we're on Twitter at Rate Descend Pod. We're on TikTok at Rating Descending. Or you can email us at ratingdescending@gmail.com. I love reading the emails. I love the fans.
Or you can find us on our personal accounts. I'm on Insta under Abigail J. Wood. Mel, are you?
I'm on all the things at either Mel Killingsworth or Mel's Bells, annoyingly spelled with an H because every other spelling was taken. But if you Google H? Mel Killingsworth, Mel's,
oh, right.
Mel's Bells.
I also do. I also run an Instagram and Twitter and Facebook called Shot Zero, where it's we great. Analyze film and television shots and scenes and what makes them work.
Mm. I really enjoy it. Yeah.
I follow you guys too.
And great. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at michelle.stclair. Also, because I'm really bad at plugging things, please go watch No Ordinary Love on YouTube. There'll be other series that I'm going to plug soon.
I have friends that we literally simultaneously watch K-dramas together. So I'm going to put this out and there will be four people watching No Ordinary Love at the same time from all around the world.
Hell yeah.
Do you have anything to plug, Mel? Anything that you have going on that you want the world to know about?
If you are a producer who likes noir feature films, I desperately have a script that is waiting for you.
Yeah. Well, that was Material Girls. Abby, what are we watching next week?
Next week, we're watching Halloween Resurrection.
Well, I liked the original Halloween and I really don't want to have to watch the rest of them. Well, but they're resurrecting. Are they resurrecting him or are they resurrecting?
Also, what year did this come out? Halloween Resurrection?
Who knows?
I don't know anything about it.
Wasn't Halloween rebooted like 80 fucking times?
Yeah, I thought it was
There's more now as well, though. Oh, 2002.
That's a bad time.
That's not going to be a good one.
No. Oh. Well, join us then.
Wow, this Wikipedia literally describes it as the unnecessary sequel to Halloween H2O.
Wow, Jesus. You guys really know how to sell a podcast.
Which I imagine is a sequel to H2O, just add water or whatever.
The mermaid one.
Yeah. Cleo. Oh, no. Mike Myers, no.
Well... Yeah, join us next week. And thank you so much, Mel, for coming on this episode.
Thank you.
You've been a delight and a treasure all at the same time.
A delightful treasure, that's me.
And now all of us are the Material Girls.
Yes, together we've become Material Girls.
In a material world.
Material Girl! Oh God, I had to do it one time. It's been in my head all fucking week because of this stupid fucking episode.
You're welcome.